I'm Amy.
I'm Wendell.
And I'm Patrick.
And
this is
Yes
But Why
Podcast.
We're sitting here at this table in Austin, Texas, and I got here because I did an improv class through a Groupon in Phoenix, Arizona. So I started in Phoenix at the Torch Theater. Shout out to Jose Gonzalez and Bill Binder and Sam Haldeman and Jackie Arndt and all those people at Torch. I love the Torch so much. But started there, and the Torch has a really good relationship with Cold Town, mm-hmm. Which got me connected to New Movement, and now Fallout Theater, Fallout Comedy Theater, I think is that the official name? And that's been my, like, comedy path so far. But, like, when I was a kid, did a lot of bits and lots of pranks and watched UCB on Comedy Central with friends.
Pranks, eh? Were you the type to be, you know, throwing people downstairs in...
bullying.
Well, but, you know, like, yeah, in... what's the name of that? Jackass and stuff. Those guys are all excited to do it. They're like, yeah, do you want to put this nail in your hand? And they're like, yeah, let me do it. And you're like, this is horrible, but they do it.
Yeah, I've done some really mean stuff that I don't feel great about. And also received some very mean pranks. I grew up in a small town, so there's not a lot to do, and so you just kind of create something.
Yeah.
And, like, for example, I didn't have Starbucks until I was, like, 16 or 17. And I used to hang out at an Arby's. 24-hour Arby's, because our friends worked there.
24-hour Arby's. Man, roast beef all the time.
People give Arby's a bad rep, but I'm just like, dude, that's where I hung out. It's, like, my childhood, so... It's a cheap joke all the time.
I like my childhood at Arby's. That seems like a that's your memoir.
Sponsored by roast beef sandwiches.
Because I mean, you're right. All of us are brands who will get sponsors someday. So you might as well get Arby's to sponsor your life.
Yeah, and so we some of the pranks that we did. The friends that worked at Arby's got like a bag of ketchup. Like a giant, it's like 5-pound bag. It's a huge thing of ketchup when we just like dumped it on our friend's mailbox. It just smelled like ketchup for weeks.
Oh my God.
Stuff like that. You know, there's this story that I tell. It's called Poop Purse. And it sounds good. It sounds exactly like what it is. You just put poop in a purse and you put it out somewhere public and you wait for someone to pick it up and see how people react. And it's great. And so some people are like actively steal it, like look around really cautiously and then pick it up and then walk away very quickly thinking they just robbed someone.
Yeah.
And so those are the parts where we're like, yeah, that feels good. But the bad parts when you feel bad is when someone's like tries to return it. They like look inside for a wallet or look inside for some type of ID card. And they're like, and then they get shit all over their hands. And they don't realize this shit. And then wipe it on their clothes.
No!
But I was 15 and 16. And I'm just like, yes, this is the best.
That sounds like a really interesting social experiment, though.
Yeah,
it is. To, like, witness the idea that some people would steal it. You know what I mean? You're like, huh. And what a thing to learn. Like, you know what I mean? Like, as a teen. Because I'm... parenting and my baby's, you know, 10 months, so I'm really very far from having moral discussions. Good. But someday I'm going to, and I wonder like how old he'll be. And I'm thinking right now, like, you're talking about this sort of like really deep idea, even though it's disgusting and like funny in a like juvenile way, it still has some like pretty intense implications to be like that. You were like, it is a real thing that people steal purses, and it's like fascinating to acknowledge that idea. Like, just the idea that's like, yeah, some people are assholes, you know, to realize that early on, I suppose.
Yeah, we tried playing the same prank when I was an adult. It does not give the same payoff. mostly because, hopefully, as you grow, you get more empathetic towards people. So a friend convinced me to do it. When I lived in Phoenix, we did it in Scottsdale, Arizona, around this, like, club area, basically, like, 36th.
Yeah.
And did it outside of this club called, I think it was maybe Devil's Martini or some weird Scottsdale club name.
Devil's Martini. Sounds like they deserved it. Let's
yeah. Okay, yeah. Thank you. I also agreed. But we put it out. My friend Maria convinced me to do it because she loved the prank idea.
Well, that's right. Let's put her name right out there. Maria told him Maria, to do it.
Maria, who lives in Italy right now, as a...
Oh, that'll she'll be easy to find then. Uh-huh. Maria in Italy. There's only one, right? Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay,
yeah, cool. She's doing missionary work in Italy right
one
now.
One Maria doing missionary work in Italy. We're narrowing. We're still having a large group.
Still anyway. A large group of people. She convinced... But as soon as I put the purse down, I felt so bad because it's like, oh, these are my peers. These are people who have jobs. They're trying to find release by going out and drinking or hooking up with people. And I'm like, oh, I just feel so bad. But we did it. And some guy picked it up and returned it to a security guard. We're like, dang it. It didn't work out.
He was too nice. He was too nice. Well, the moral of the story is I guess some people are real responsible.
Yeah, it's true.
And also drink at the Devil's Martini. Man, who knew those two went hand in hand?
I know.
I wonder if there's a different possible, like, it makes me want to figure out if there's other things you could put out to draw people's attention and have there be some sort of moral quandary. Because that kind of stuff would be fascinating. I mean, don't get me wrong, I support Maria and her missionary work, and I also support this idea. Yeah. And now I'm like, no, let's do it again. Yeah. Austin, it's South By, guys. Let's do it right now. They deserve it. No, but it'd be interesting because it would seem poop would be hard to come by. You could probably have a lot of cat poop, and that's hard. You could touch that. It doesn't get anything on your hands.
Yeah, no.
We just fill a purse right up with it. It'd be great.
Okay, let's just... Fill it up with cat poop.
It's going to be great. And I'll be like, what's this? Is this a milk dud? It's not a milk dud.
No, that's actual poop.
But it would be fascinating to see, to like film it or do it a bunch of times and film it and have, see like just the different reactions to something else too. Like, I don't know, poop is a very specific reaction. And I wondered if there'd be other things like a wallet with, I don't know, what could be gross that we could put in a wallet. Sardines, I guess? I don't know. Yeah. Like, what's little that could slide in there? Yeah,
what's something, like, not gross that's going to be... cause, like, a biohazard outbreak?
You're right. Now we have to worry about that shit.
Yeah.
You try to do these, like, you know, prank ideas and really all of a sudden, you know, you're getting put in a hazmat suit and brought to the FBI. You're like, no, I was just... It's flour.
But don't you get it? It's just poop. It's flour. It's just flour. It's only flour.
Well, I've actually known people who have done... Speaking of flour, you would flour in a bag and make somebody steal what they think is cocaine, right? I mean, I don't know if the consistency... I have no idea, but... I'm sure you could do other things like that. I know a few people...
It's a great idea.
You know, where it's like, yeah, put this bag of oregano and see who's going to pick it up. And are they going to look around? Or are they just like, swoop? You know... Oh, man. Are they like, yes, best day ever? Who knows what their reaction
should
be?
They, like, put it on Instagram. Just got a quarter of weed or, I don't know, measurements.
Sure.
I'm not that person.
That seems fine.
Okay.
Oh, man. So you started out with pranks.
Started.
Small town pranks. That seems good.
Yeah.
Did any of your prank friends go on to do theater?
Let me think.
Or did you do theater during the prank period?
Yeah. I never did theater ever. I was a band geek, played drums.
Oh, right on. Awesome.
Yeah. And then I moved to Phoenix with my best friend, Joe, and we took improv classes together. And so we went on and did that for a while. And then when I moved here, I can't think of any other Ohio friends that are into improv. They're into other creative outlets like videography or photography or writing and stuff like that, but nothing that's
awesome.
Less like a comedy or a comedy focused.
How'd you get to Phoenix from Ohio?
I went to school there.
Oh, cool. So yes. Like college?
Yeah.
Nice.
Went to school for video game design. I'm a huge nerd.
Drums and video game design? You're super cool.
Yeah,
what are you talking about?
Thank you. yeah. And that was fun. Worked in that industry for about 10 months. Figured it was not for me, that video games are definitely a hobby and not a career.
Oh, interesting.
And then worked at a Jamba Juice for 1 month.
worked at a Jamba Juice for 1 month.
Yeah.
I like how that's the career path. I did a lot of video games, hated it, worked at Jamba Juice, and hated it more.
Yeah, and then a series of random odd jobs after that.
Yeah, absolutely. I've had a lot of weird jobs in my life, for sure. Yeah. What about the video game industry made it not for you?
In order to, like, move up, I did QA testing, which is, like, video game testing, trying to break the game. People were working, my peers were working, like, 50 to 60 to 65 hours a week, like, on overtime, and that was, like, consuming their lives. And I was 22, 23, 24, just, like, wanting, small town kid, wanting to experience the city. Like, I just don't have that work ethic to work that much for, like, little payoff, like, getting paid $9.50 an hour.
Oh, shit.
And so I have friends that still work in QA that, like, love what they do, but they're only getting paid, like, $10 an hour.
Wow.
From that time.
That sucks. It seems like a very important part to not get paid very well.
Yeah,
it's,
I know.
It's like, dude, this is a huge... I mean, like, I get you're not the, like, programmer or whatever, but, you know, getting it sold is kind of a big part of the whole situation.
Very important,
there
yeah.
can be a guy behind a computer for however long you'd like, but if nobody buys it, well, that's wasted time.
Yeah, and if it's broken, that's wasted time for everyone, too.
Yeah. Yeah, if somebody's like, no, I'm sorry, this is boring, or you said I was supposed to go through 47 levels, it stops at 20. You're like, okay, there seems to be a glitch. You gotta fix those things. Yeah, I mean, you need that. That's yeah. super important. Man, I hate that shit. When it's like the parts that seem the most important are the ones that get paid the least. You know what I mean? Like, certainly in a lot of customer service scenarios, like, like, dealing with customers, that's what should be paid very little. You're like, you know what? Customers are horrible.
All the time.
No one likes a customer. Like,
yeah. It's
that
bad.
Person's upset about their lives all the time. They should be making more. If you're, like, alone in a room and working, less money.
Yeah.
Because you're like, oh, cool. I got this. Though, alternately, I suppose I have had jobs because I'm, you know, I do theater. I've done theater forever. And I am more of a social person. So I had a job, like an odd job, doing data entry for a medical company one time.
Wow.
And I had to be in a room by myself just loading paper forms and not like scanning, not like as simple as like a scanner. It was like I had to refill out the form on the
it's
the
like
computer.
Manual entry.
Yeah, just total data entry. And because it was... like, you know, people's medical records, those of us who did it were all in separate rooms. And I was like, what are we going to do? Where am I going to steal? I mean, this is before cell phones. Like, I know of, somebody I was just talking to was talking about how they worked with medical records and how they have to check in their cell phone at the beginning of the day when they work.
Wow.
Because they can't, like, reveal the people's personal... situations. It's important, I suppose. But it was just such a weird thing. I was like, can we just sit next to each other? And they're like, no.
Right. Might, like, share stuff with each other.
Yeah, as
but you're doing
me
the same
and
jobs,
the other
right?
coworker. Yeah, right? But I guess it's like, hey, man, you know, like, Marianne Lewis? Lupus. Yeah, that's what you get. That's what it says right here. Like, I guess that's not cool. I mean, you know. I don't know. What are we going to do? What are the two of us going to talk about? I don't know. But yeah, being alone in a room wasn't as exciting as I wanted it to be, I suppose, in that scenario. Man, I always get myself in these circles where I'm like, no, I'm wrong all of a sudden. Damn it. I should just stand my ground. I want American of me.
Yeah.
So you went to Phoenix, you went to college, and then you started doing improv. Was improv, was it like Jamba Juice improv?
Let me think. That's a great sentence, Jamba Juice improv. I was Jamba Juice, and then I will tell you that I really love dancing. Dancing and improv, like, are the two things that make me feel, like, really free in my body.
Yeah.
And so I worked at doing ballroom dance for 10 months. I taught ballroom dance lessons.
That's wonderful!
Because I was, like, really into swing dancing, like, really into swing dancing.
Oh.
For, like, maybe, I was danced for, like, 8 or 9 years or something.
I think that that's a big thing. The swing dance community across the country is huge.
Oh, so fucking
and people
big.
People are doing so much. I have a friend who just moved from Denver to Portland, Maine, and literally was like, I was like, you gonna be all right? Like, that's a huge move. She's like, no, I have friends already. And I was like, how do you have friends? She's like, oh, the swing community. They're already ready to welcome me. We're gonna have a party. And I was like, hilarious. I love that you just, like, go to these, you've never met these people, but you are like, yeah, absolutely. I'll go hang out with them and we'll be friends. So wild.
Yeah. And the swing dance community is very similar to the improv community.
Huh. That's so awesome.
I think Gina, another performer, she's also a swing dancer.
Yeah.
And I didn't know her through that community, but we always talked about the parallels of, like, listening and dancing and just feeling, being honest in the moment of those, when you're dancing or when you're performing.
Yeah, plus the sort of small small moves to indicate change with each other.
It's
like when you know, because I've done a little bit of swing dancing, like in right after college, I did a little bit of it, but I didn't get involved. I just took, like, I think I went to some club with a couple friends of mine, and we ended up going for a couple of weeks, and then it was like I was just doing comedy. So, but to know the idea of the way that they communicate is very like improv, you know what I mean? Because there's a lot of things you do in improv to let your scene partner know things that the audience can't tell, but like the other people, or even anything, like one of my favorite lessons that I like to teach in my level one is I'll make them all wordlessly play a single character, and they have to walk into a room and interact with three objects. And then when we finish that, we confirm what those three objects are, and then I go, what do we assume about a person who interacts with those three objects? What do we know about them? And I like to make larger, like, jumps. Like, it's like, this person is using a clicker and a TV, so they're not homeless. So they probably have a job. It's very likely. They're over 18.
Oh, that's good.
You know, like, just little things that you can assume. It's like, this person walked in and used a walker. We know their age already. Great. Sweet. We've got that out of the way. We don't have to ask. We don't have to make... We can make that assumption directly. Mm-hmm. And so the idea of that makes me think of certain moves that I recall in swing dancing, where it's like, you know, the squeeze of a hand, or like the position of your hand on your back can let you know, okay, we're going to change what we normally do in this moment, and we're going to do this other move. And it's like, I love this.
Yeah.
And the audience is like, how did they know?
That's communication,
so great.
Baby.
Great. I love it.
Yeah.
That's so fun.
Yeah. And you can just like feel in the music or in the dancing till when you're like really, for me, like when I'm really having a great dance with my, with a dance partner or even just myself, it's just like feels so free and feels so good. And it feels very easy. And same thing with I'm in a scene with anyone, and I feel like I'm being listened to, or I feel like I'm listening to them. It just feels like anything is fully, there's like elements of trust all over it.
Speaking of which, you've got a troupe that you've been with for a long time, Empty Promises, right?
Empty Promises, that's
and,
right.
And you guys are, so you've worked together quite a long time. You probably have the sort of wordless communication down and really awesome listening. What are you doing now? And you don't have to like trade secrets. Tell us no, it's going. Don't tell us how Empty Promises does it. Yeah. They're too amazing for everyone to know. But you've recently added a couple new members. Are there
a lot of new members?
How many did you add? What happened?
We added six.
Did you lose
or seven.
Some?
We added a lot.
It's probably better.
Yeah. It is. It is very good. So there was originally seven of us, and then it came down to three of us after people moved on to different stuff or took breaks or are in different seasons of life or of their comedy careers.
Yeah.
We added six or seven people, and we did a rehearsal and kind of based who we picked on who we felt made good moves, good improvised instincts or techniques or moves or ones that we just liked and made us laugh.
Right on. And now you are having rehearsals to kind of meld together to kind of find that space, or are you do you guys rehearse regularly, like weekly, to
every week
get in each other's heads and make sure you're connected?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, we work every week with Jastro.
Oh, good. So you have, like, a solid coach.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
We work with Michael Jastro, and he's great. Teaches, we've been a Herald troop since we started. We're the longest running Herald troop in Austin.
Nice. No big deal.
I feel that's like silly.
That's wonderful.
I just like saying silly facts.
No, that's wonderful. Absolutely.
Yeah. And he works with us about, we're doing first and second beats right now, and his mind is incredible. And people are making so many good moves in rehearsal. I'm just like, oh, man, hope we can do this on a stage in front of an audience, because it's rehearsal is always amazing.
Sure, yeah. Rehearsal can be such a different world, for sure.
Yeah, and I'm sure you've probably experienced that, too, when you're like, these rehearsals are sometimes better than the shows we put on.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I told somebody the other day, I haven't done improv in a while, and it's because I'm still kind of mourning the end of my last troupe, which was Water Park. It was a musical improv troupe, and it just... We added a few at the end, like when people had moved away and we needed to flesh it out again. But once we got those new people, we did a couple of shows and then everybody kind of got busy and then it broke up. But originally when we had the like first five of us who did shows for a while, I mean, the rehearsals were like transcendent. It was like, because we're singing too. So like we're in rehearsals trying to do... Because we spent a lot of rehearsal time working on song structure so that... Because we were like, we all know how to do improv. Great. We'll do some improv rehearsals for sure. But at first, we need to sing together. We need to figure out different ways to sing. And similar to what we were talking about with the swing dancing, figure out ways to like communicate with each other. I'm about to sing this kind of song. Join in with me in this way without directly saying it and letting the audience know. So we did a bunch of that kind of stuff. And so, man, sometimes we'd record them and it'd be like, what, this, the harmonies we got going, like the levels of this song, like, oh my God. And then we'd do a show and, you know, nerves are intense and there's people around and we're like, what's going to happen? And we make dumb decisions on stage and all of a sudden we're singing some stupid song that doesn't sound as good as any of the rehearsal songs, you know. Yeah, I bet too you guys have a wonderful, like, new group vibe where you're like just excited to be with one another.
Yeah, it's cool.
That's great.
Everyone's really talented, really smart, and like a diverse experience of improv and backgrounds and perspective and culture, and that's kind of what we're that was the goal, to add more people to give different perspectives, because it was all like us white guys for a long time.
I was going to ask, did you add females or is it still an all dude troop?
Yeah. We had some badass women. Great. And a few other dudes.
Yeah, seven people. That's a lot of people to
have. Yeah. Everyone's really good.
That's awesome. I like that you guys have a coach too, because I find that, especially with troops that have been around for a little while, if there isn't a coach to be the leader, then the people who have been around longer end up sort of like being leader by, you know, grandfathered in. And then there's tension when you play, because you're like, it's like playing with my boss, you know, and that's not quite as fun, you know? Yeah, that can be difficult if you don't have like a regular coach to kind of buoy the tough times.
Yeah. Someone, an unbiased third party.
Yeah. Has Jess been working with, Empty Promises for a long, long time?
We worked with Jastro maybe a couple of years ago. It was a year ago, off and on for maybe 6 months. And then we worked with one coach for a couple of years when we first started.
Right on.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he's helped you guys shape your show and get a good flow for how you're performing together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jastro's a great coach because he just like calls us out and like just side coaches us a lot. Like, why did you make that move? And ask us to like defend some of our work or choices that we make. In essence, for us to communicate our thoughts. And not saying that there are better moves, but just so we understand the choices that we're making in those moments.
Yeah. Plus, to, like, have the wherewithal to think about what you're doing.
Yes.
In the moment is a skill that you have to really work on. Mm-hmm. That's one of the hardest parts. I personally, like I said, haven't really performed too much improv. Like, I've done a lot of sketch for the past couple of years. And so my improv's on the wayside as far as my performance. Thankfully, I teach level one, so I can perform level one.
And you're a great level one teacher.
Oh, you're very sweet. Thank you for that. I like it a lot, talking with the new people, but one of the things that is super hard, and I always tell them, guys, I have this problem too, so don't feel bad that you have it, but it's when you're on stage and your brain is just so, like, trying to do so many things that it becomes, like, white noise, like you turned on the television to a channel it doesn't have, and I'm like, every time I'm on stage, all I hear in my head is just shh.
Yes, yeah.
I was like, believe me, it's okay, because they'll go and do something, and I'll ask them a question like that, and it's level one, so like they have no idea why they did anything, but I'll go, why do you think maybe you made that decision? And then they're like, did I say that? And you're like, you did, you know, and I'm like, I totally understand, like. Believe me, when you're up on stage, it is so like, oh, what's happening right now? So to be able to calm down and do it, it sounds really wonderful. How consistently, like, did you guys take a break when it whittled down to three, or did you just perform as a threesome and then decide, yeah, we need more to bulk this crowd up?
Yeah, let me think. Yeah, we had a lot of out-of-town shows. So we went to a Del Close Marathon, DCM, in New York over the summertime, and that was incredible. Played at UCB. It was such a good feeling to play on that stage. It was great. And then we had a show in Washington, D.C. at the D.C. D.C., Washington, D.C. in September of 2017. And then Alejandro moved away, and then a few other people, like, took breaks. And we kind of recalibrated, like, what we want. And so a lot of this work has been done with, like, me and Matt Needles saying, like, hey, we want to continue this. And, like, Amy, you know what this is like when everyone's moving away and you, like, have this project you're, like, you put time and effort and money into and you're like, I don't want this to die. Yeah. What can we do to make this project not die? Either that's, like, an identity thing, like, this is mine, or this is ours. I don't know what those motivations are. We could probably talk about that for hours.
I think that a lot of times when you have a project that you know goes well, and you get to a point sort of age in life where you're willing to deal with the ups and downs. Like,
yeah.
Because sometimes, like, it sounds like very natural what happened with the people moving away. Somebody got a new job. Somebody's got,
absolutely,
you know, a baby. They can't do as much. You know, it's difficult to navigate. So, yeah, that happens. But sometimes, you know, it's more about, it turns out this isn't something I want to put all my energy into. And you're like, okay, I do. This is how I want to put my energy. And so it's almost like your identity to have this group.
It totally is.
It can be hard to, like, finish and start over with a brand new group. Again, like I said, I'm about 3 years mourning my last troop, so I understand. but I mean, I do understand the idea of trying to maintain a project. Like, my sketch show, The Neighborhood, no one other than myself has been in every single one of the neighborhoods. Like, I have... there's an ebb and flow of people in and out of that show. People will come for 6 months, they'll, you know, do the show with me, and then they're gone. And, you know, it's each time for them, it's like a sad breakup when they leave. And the more it happens, the more I'm just like, it's cool. No worries. There's somebody else that wants to be in the show. Like, you're fine. It's going to be okay.
And like,
it's kind of like
it.
You hold... Well, yeah, but you do it for a long time. If you're the one... If I had had 3 or 4 other people and it was like us and then we continued... Like, if I had Matt Needles, you know, if I had someone who was next to me who was doing it and I could see it feel differently. But right now it's kind of like, no, this is just the flow of this show. The fact that you do 3 months and then you're gone... Totally cool. No worries. You're all good. Like, it's kind of like accepting, like I said, the ebb and flow of a relationship. Because, like, as you get older, if you're friends with somebody for a long time, or if you're dating somebody, or if you're married to somebody, some days it's not great. Sometimes you're like, okay, whatever.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and same with troops, you know? So sometimes you're like, okay, whatever. And like any relationship, you make a decision whether or not you want to keep it or if you want to let it go and move forward, you know? Some relationships, troops, marriages, they're tough to break up, and people generally feel sad at the end of them. But sometimes, I mean, like, we've all done, I don't know how much other travel you had. I mean, going from Ohio to Arizona is kind of huge, so when you leave places, because I traveled around a bunch when I first graduated from college to be like, where should I live? I don't know. And there's a lot of friends that I had. It was so important, our relationship. And then I don't really even talk to them now. Like, I, you know, thank God for Facebook, I suppose, because it's like, I know what they're doing. I saw them, they got married. I, you know, look at whatever. But it's like, I don't talk to that person. And it's okay. So, I don't know. Some people that are younger, when they're doing improv troupes, they kind of don't accept that part.
That you will, people will drift away from each other.
Yeah, and that it's okay.
Yeah.
And then it's okay. You can keep doing whatever. I mean, like I said, if you want to maintain one, great. That's a big deal one. You know, you want to maintain doing one particular show. It's important to you to maintain it. Great. Even then, you know, no matter how long it is. It's like, what was it? There was somebody's, I want to say it was even a Louis C.K. joke where he was like, if you talk to somebody and they tell you they're divorced, don't say you're sorry. Say congratulations. because they're happy they're not in that relationship. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, well, that's what happens when there's a breakup of some kind. Some people are like, ah, thank goodness I'm done with that. And some people are like, oh, it's so sad that I'm not still doing that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
I don't know.
Mourn and celebrate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Different emotions that are happening all at once.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you think you're living Austin for a while? Do you think you'll be working on Empty Promises for another couple of years?
I hope so.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's kind of all up in the air. My girlfriend, Casey, is a songwriter. Mm-hmm. And so she's been traveling back and forth to L.A. and Nashville.
Awesome.
I hope she chooses L.A. Nothing against Nashville. I hear it's great. And that's a person yelling here.
It's okay.
That's great.
He also doesn't like Nashville. I mean, wait.
Yeah. Obviously. So maybe LA could be in the future. It's kind of all up in the air. And I hope to bring Empty Promises with us, because Needles and I have talked about moving it there. Alejandro Garcia's in LA.
Oh.
And a few other pals are there. And so
yeah.
We shall see.
It's interesting. I've actually heard that there is a whole, like, transplant Austin community in LA right now.
Yeah, are you kidding me? Yeah, there's so many people.
There's a ton. But not only that they all happen to be there, but that they hang out. And that people that didn't hang out when they were in Austin are now friends because they're just, that's who's around their area of yes. Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Austin, a kind of place where even though you will bitch about going north or south, you totally will drive 45 minutes to do anything.
Of course.
From what I understand, LA, they don't love that as much. They kind of stay in their neighborhood. They don't really move because everywhere they go, it's worse than Austin traffic. So they're just like, yeah, you know what? This 5-block radius is my life now.
That's everything.
Which is fascinating, that whole idea. I feel like it's a big city that wants to be a small town, 1,000 small towns.
That's totally true. Do you like LA, Amy?
I've been there in a touristy fashion.
Okay.
And I've had weird, weird little adventures. You know, because some of my girlfriends from college moved there and I went to visit. So it was kind of a weird, like, I'm 23 and visiting my friend who works at a t-shirt shop and she has to work today. So I think I'll stand outside the t-shirt shop. You know, it's just random kid thing. I sat on a bench for like 4 hours and just people watched on Rodeo Drive or something. And it was like, I ended up bumping into people who were in movies that I knew, like that I had done theater with, and I was like, hey, how are you doing? And they're like, what are you doing on this street in the middle of, you don't live here? And I was like, I don't live here, you know.
Wow.
So it was just a weird touristy adventures. I've been to like, what's the Universal Studios, that kind of stuff when I was a kid. But I need to get back there because my Uncle Joey, who's like my godfather, who's like my theatrical muse, lives there. And he's a working actor. He was like my dad's youngest brother who, when I was born, had just moved to New York to try it out. And he's still acting. And so I'm like, yeah, man, yeah. He's my like guy. I like Los Angeles. I like the fact that there's this community, because from what I hear about the Austin crowd is that it's a little doggy dog in LA, of course.
Of course.
And it can be a little hard on the old soul. So having the little Austin pals, you can go in and be nice to each other and no one's going to get mad at you for it.
Nice, calm safety net. Social safety net.
Yeah. It should be interesting. I wonder if that happens with all sorts of people, because everyone moves to... I've met a handful of people that were originally from Los Angeles, and I'm like, really, what does that mean? But I was like, they let children there? I didn't think...
Can you grow up there? I thought only adults allowed.
Yeah, I thought, you know, did you just get an adult job? You're an agent, right? Yeah, well, I was an agent.
Get in here, Robert Downey Jr.
Tell us about your life. But I don't know. I'd love to go there and see what's going on. Try to see if I can't find the, you know, sort of hippy dippy. Not the improv there is weird, but I feel like every time I look at improv stuff, though, I'm looking at it through the lens of my Austin transplant friends. So it's like I look at Jeff Whitaker's stuff and the stuff he does at IO, and I'm like, okay, cool. IO, check. Good yeah. place to go. He's there. Good. I feel like UCB is, like, scary, you know, because it's got famous people there all the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, who's going to give me stage time if, like, friggin' famous people are there?
Anyone will give you stage time.
Yeah, maybe. But who knows? I mean, there's a lot of, especially the larger a school gets, the more difficult it can become to have stage time. I mean, that's something that I feel like happens everywhere. And something, especially when you first start out, that people are like, we're not going to be that way. And it's like, don't say that. Never say that out loud. You can say that in your small meetings, but never advertise that you are going to provide this thing. Because you can't. Yeah. You just can't. Like, you don't know. One of the most interesting things that I find, and I'm sorry I'm taking us off on some weird tangents and maybe unrelated, but one of the things that I find most interesting, having done theater for a long time, is that there's people who have talent, and then there's people who have interest, and then the people who actually get it done are just the ones that have the, like, ability to do the scheduling stuff, the ability to keep the organizational. Like, you're talking about Empty Promises going to festivals, and I'm like, oh, man, I wish I was better at that. Like, just the idea that a person, somebody within your group, took the time to fill out all those applications, pay the things to try to get you there, and then wrangle however many of you to go, okay, guys, now we all gotta go to New York. You buy your plane ticket? Come on, did you get it yet? You gotta go. Come on. That idea, that's so much work.
It is a lot of work.
And, like, that's who does it. It's very stressful. Yeah. Like, that's who does theater. People can be talented. People can be, you know, funny. But the people who actually accomplish it, the people who should get the stage time, are those people who put the effort in, who put the go through the tough stuff.
Man, I wish I could show you my spreadsheet. Empty Promises has a spreadsheet that we kind of created. I will say I did a lot of the work because I like doing excited. That stuff. Yeah, it's the show. Almost every show that we've done, I would say probably 90% of every show that we've done. Dating back to, like, 2014. Wow. So we're at, like, maybe over 150, like 157 or something like that. Like, where we played, what the date was, and roughly, like, which members were there and which members missed.
Whoa.
So that we have a calculation of, like, what theaters have we played at a lot, how many festivals have we played at, and just have an idea so we can look back and see this data. We're like, oh, we have played there, or we are doing work, we are getting shows.
Oh, interesting.
And so those seasons of, like, we didn't have, Empty Promises didn't have shows from, like, October until this month. And, like, we've never had that before. We've usually had a show every other week or something like that. And to feel like this project is failing in those seasons, we have some of those. For me, it feels really good to look back on this data. And say, like, oh, yeah, we got to play at Station Theater in Houston. We got to play in Phoenix in October, in D.C., and in New York City on 2017.
Yeah, like, makes you feel better, even though there's some lulls in that thing. That's really fascinating that you keep track of that. Do you keep track... Now, based on what you're saying, the metrics that you're looking at, yeah. do you ever notice, like, regular lulls? Like, it's like, okay, every December we never do shows because it just gets crazy. Like, for me, that's my lull. That's when I know really? I will specifically wind down everything that I'm working on knowing I'm going to screw it up in December. Because December is like an insane... I should be the kind of person who buys a planner that starts in July because why am I buying it in December for January? Mm-hmm. Like, it's the middle of my life. But it doesn't matter. Every time, it just goes crazy. Have you noticed that there's, like, 1 month or, like, a certain time when there's a lull?
That's a good... I haven't noticed that. I haven't looked at any of those trends yet. There are different theaters that will book us more often.
At certain times of year?
We don't have that specifics, but we know, like, theaters that like us and theaters that are less likely to book us.
Sure.
And so trying to, like, build those relationships so we get to play on their stages more.
Interesting. I wonder, since you're very specifically a Herald troupe, if some of the schools that, like, really don't have a lot of Herald stuff are like, yeah, it's cool. Nah, don't worry about it. Yeah. Or, like, some of the short form where it's like, this doesn't really play to what we're selling.
Yeah.
So this isn't really...
totally true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is fair.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I just did... So the past 2 months, the neighborhood performed at the Hideout. Wow. And it was a very different audience. It was just way different. And this month was the first month that we did it at both places. So, like, we did the first... Last weekend, we performed at Hideout. And this weekend, we performed at Fallout. And it was like, whoa. The audiences were markedly different. And not, like, visually. Like, it was like, you look at it, and you're like, okay. We got a cross-section of, you know, probably 20 to 45 guys and girls. They're all drinking beers. Like... Well, looks pretty regular to me. And then some group, like the, because we did two months there, and the audience just, like, reacts differently. They, like, have a different, they receive the comedy in a different way. Even the, like, laughter versus clapping sort of politeness scenario. Yes. You're like, good. We started a lot of, like, after, like, lights go down, clapping ourselves in the back. We were like, you know, because it's like, hey, listen, nobody cares if you liked it or you didn't. The polite thing is when the lights go off, you clap.
Yeah, that's, like, what you do.
And I wish that there is, like, and part of me feels like I might, like, make a little thing that says, this is your job now.
Yeah.
Like, do you remember, did you ever see a Bad Example show, speaking of Jeff Whitaker,
20 minutes ago? I have seen Bad Example, yeah.
At the beginning of the show, they had that PowerPoint, the little, like, thing that essentially spoke to the audience, and it was just the screen and some words, but everyone would intently read it and interact with this, like, ghost personality in the thing, and they're like, and it would make jokes at them, and they'd laugh at those jokes, and I was like, how interesting. But they all would get on the same page. It would tell them certain things. It would be like, hey, this is gonna happen, try to turn off your cell phones, like, alright, now we're gonna do this now, is everybody ready? I don't think you're ready yet, like, and it was like, it's just like somebody's hitting a button on, and they're all into this thing. And I was like, oh, I see. So you got to tell them what to do.
Yeah.
You got to explain to them how to be an audience. Your job is.
Yeah. And if you're an audience member, like, what are you thinking? You're like, I'm experiencing this. Now this screen, these speakers are talking to me.
Yeah.
And this is what I'm supposed to do. Now I have an active role in this show.
Right.
This may be faux interactivity.
Yeah.
But still, relatively cool.
Sometimes I wonder if that's what people are looking for. Like, people who go to improv and sketch shows that aren't performers at all, if they're looking for a little, like, interaction.
Yeah.
You know? If even just the moments, like, because, like, for instance, the show Fuck This Week, super popular. And I think it's super popular because people feel a literal catharsis when they hear people's stories and they can identify with those stories. And then we can all make fun of it as a group. Right? And, like, so I remember hearing about that and I was like, who's going to tell their private sad stories? Like, and I was like, apparently everyone.
Everyone wants to.
Yeah, apparently people are just dying to tell you what's wrong with their life.
Yes, all the time.
So funny.
All the time.
It's just such a weird kind of... I don't know, scenario to get the audience involved. What's your like relationship with the audience? Like as far as like how do you feel about, you know, how you work with them, or it's an important part of being a performer, but
Empty Promises, what we like to do, and I know Needles loves to do this, is he crawls around the space a lot and like interacts with people as if like they're part of the set. Not necessarily talking to them, but like using their space to whatever his advantage. Like if it's a baseball game, he'll be an outfielder catching a ball in the stands,
right,
so to speak.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's where we have played. We've done some other stuff like The Dream, which is basically similar to any other Armando set where someone says their dream and then we recreate their dream.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, that's fun.
That has a pleasant turn to it. It's not like, how is your life shitty?
Oh, tell us how shitty it is.
Let's all be shitty together. Oh, yeah, I mean, well, there's a lot of that. I have a hard time with it, and I think I indulged in the improv community of positivity. When you teach level one, there's a lot of, like, hey, guys, don't worry. Everything's perfect all the time. Because you have to buoy a person in the world of it and then send them off to make it more difficult in the other levels.
Yes.
So that's what I consider my job as a level one, is to, like, provide you with the proper bubble that you need mm-hmm. to get yourself through, like, 2 and 3 before you realize all of a sudden you're in level 4 and you're like, wait, how am I? Oh, I know how to do stuff. Because you feel safe and comfortable. But
yeah, this like firm foundation.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember when I was taking your level one class, we tried to do tag outs and you're like, don't use those tricks.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh yeah, I should just rely on these instincts or these basic foundational moves. And I thought that was a really good move. Like I was frustrated in that moment.
Yeah.
But like when I, on my drive home, I was like, oh, that's probably a good thing. Because, like, that's what we're trying to learn or trying to perfect those foundational improv moves.
Yeah, I like to think of it like an artist drawing. Like, if you're going to go to art school and they're starting you off, they're giving you a pencil and a piece of paper first. They're not like, oh, yeah, did you want to play with the paints that cost millions of dollars? Oh, a 40-foot canvas? You got it, first year. Like, no, that's not what they're doing. They're like, okay, we'll see if you've got it, and then we'll let you use all the amazing stuff that we have here at this art school. But it's like, you know, you have to figure out how to walk before, or crawl before you can walk, or walk before you can run.
Yeah.
Like, and it's important to go back to those things. I actually, because I teach level one and haven't performed in a little while, whenever I, like, pop in on something, I find I just stick with foundational stuff. I don't usually do tap-outs or stuff. For a while, there was a regular class. The Megaphone Show has, like, guest players, so, like, yeah. I'll guest play, you know, once a month or once every couple months. And they had, like, a monthly class you could go to that just like helps those of us who are guest players like freshen up on the style, and also for the people who are the main cast to kind of tell us their like the things that they're excited about, like mm-hmm. We do a lot of fast tap outs, or oh, we decided we wanted to do a lot of scenes like this, because each group that leads it will have a different style.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And so you'll go, cool, yeah, whatever I can do to make this happen. And I remember doing like it had been a while, and Aaron Walther was teaching the like Armando refresher, and we did an exercise that was just like constant tap outs. It was just like, okay, we're gonna do this thing and we're gonna do as many tap outs until we think there's nowhere else we can go. And mm-hmm. we're like, okay. And so we kept trying, and then afterwards he took notes and then gave notes to each of us on our tap out choices. And I thought that was really fascinating, because he was like, you know, like even little things, like it was like, that was a good tap out, but in the path that we were on, you went 3 or 4 steps back in intensity and heightening to make your joke, and so you have to keep us on that. And I was like, oh, I love this. This is yeah. great. But it's like just the little ideas, these classes. In fact, I don't know. I'm excited to take more classes.
Cool.
I'm going to be doing that soon.
Really?
I'm trying to go around and take more classes other places.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
That's fun.
I didn't feel so free to do it before. But now I do.
You can. Yeah. You can do whatever you want.
I know. It's so weird to feel not free.
Yeah.
Or to realize that you didn't feel free when you become free. And you're like, oh, I didn't realize I had a thumb upon me. So as far as you guys... the other thing I was going to ask you about your spreadsheet was...
let's talk all day about spreadsheets.
I am psyched about this spreadsheet, by the way. I'm looking forward to looking at it. I already wrote it down. Of course I did.
Yeah.
I was like heart around the word spreadsheet in my notebook. Do you use it for like promotional materials? Like to say like, this troupe has been part of 13 festivals in this town, and, performed over 100 shows.
Yeah,
you know?
Bullshit blurbs.
Yeah,
that, like, get people's attention, but really don't mean anything.
Of course, but if you write, it's all about writing it. I mean, I've known people that write great blurbs and have done, like, 2 shows. And you're like, how did you get to headline that thing? And it's just selling yourself.
Yeah, that's basically why we do it, too. And that's why we love going to festivals, but also so we can put more of those festival names in our blurbs.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so that's fun. And as silly as a bit as it is, it's also based in reality, too. we definitely use all of that data. There's another sheet which also tracks all of the spending that we do. So spending for festivals, who paid for it, and also spending for rehearsals, like who's paid and who hasn't paid, and trying to keep people accountable, I really struggled to do that because I'm really weird with money.
Sure.
And money's always weird to either receive or give. My friends will all tell you I'm really weird about it.
Money is a deal breaker.
Strange.
It's so crazy
to like talk about. But I created everything and just said, hey, let's be transparent. Let's be responsible players. If people pay for something and you're not there, like you're still somewhat responsible for it. And so that we're all like on the same page.
Do you guys do like dues?
We don't do any dues, necessarily, but for rehearsals, a lot of what we do is if we have enough people, we pay $5 towards the rate of the coach, and then any extra money will go towards festival costs. So maybe those are sort of dues.
Yeah.
So to speak.
Yeah, I mean, probably better you don't call them dues. People don't like it.
Yeah, it's not a membership club.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I always like to... I tried to do dues for a little while with the neighborhood because we were buying a lot of props, or I was buying a lot of props. And I was like, guys, I hate to tell you this, but I'm the number one person that doesn't have money in this group. I was like, do you know this is the only job I have? Yeah. So I don't have any money. I was like, so if we could all throw some money into this PayPal, it would help me buy the props that you want. I was like, I'll go find stuff everywhere. I'll go hell and high water to find the perfect mask that we need for something, but I don't have the money to buy it. Like,
did you find that was hard to do?
Yeah, and it sort of failed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, also keep in mind, like, my group is an ever evolving group. So it was like people would join us and then I'd be like, great, give me money. And they were like, not into it. It was like the group that came up with the idea of having the dues paid great. That was wonderful for about 3 or 4 months. That group was all like, this is the right thing to do. And I was like, okay. But then when new people came in, they were kind of like, I don't know if that's the right thing to do. And
it's
so just then.
It's a multi level marketing thing.
Yeah, right. What are you doing with that money? And it's like, okay. So. Yeah, that can be tough. I like the idea that your spreadsheet is open to every member, so it's like super transparent. It's not like, what's happening with that money? How is that working?
Yeah.
It should be interesting.
Yeah, so far so good.
I'm excited that your new troupe, like the new group that's together, is having fun and going to develop some cool new stuff.
I think so, too.
I think it should be a good time. I didn't realize, it's totally wild, when I called you to do those shows, I didn't realize you hadn't had shows for a little while. I just heard that you guys had re-upped and had new members, and I was like, well, they're making something new. Let's do it.
No, yeah, thank you, yeah.
It seemed like, you know, if you're out there trying to make something, you're putting people together and you're excited about it, why shouldn't that be the person who's on stage?
Thank you. Yeah, it felt really good. So thank you for giving us shows, allowing us to create this art form that sometimes is great.
And sometimes not great. It's okay, I'll say it. Yeah, it's fine.
It's fine. I wanted to go back to a subject that I'm really interested in right now.
100%.
So we talked about like audience interactivity.
Uh-huh.
And so there's like things that I've loved this that I got to experience in the last like past year. Are you familiar with Meow Wolf? Or have you heard of this?
I heard of it via Facebook stuff, but mm-hmm. I tell me about it.
It's an interactive museum, and it's this house art installation, and there's a bunch of secret passages, but there's also a narrative that you can follow throughout this art installation. It starts with a letter, you read this piece of mail, and it leads you to a newspaper, and that newspaper leads you to a safe where you input a code, but it's all these different installations of art that you can interact with, books you can open, magazines you can read, a refrigerator that you can open and you can go inside and it takes you to another installation.
Huh.
But it's interactive and it feels personalized. And there's like things that I discovered that my friends who visited didn't discover. It's things that they discovered that they told me about. But it felt unique. And that I also got to do Sleep No More. Have you ever heard of Sleep No More?
Maybe. Is it New York?
It's in New York. Yeah, it's in, like an interactive Macbeth. I think it's Macbeth.
So it's like a big party, right? And you wander around and people mess with you? Tell me about it.
Yeah. It takes place on this building in New York. It's 3 stories. It's 3 hours. $70. $80. It's super expensive, but totally worth it.
$80 for 3 hours. That's pretty solid.
I know. Yeah. It's an interactive play. Instead of the stage happening like where you sit and watch, this is like a play that's happening in this building on all different levels. So you meet this cast member and they're like interacting with this other cast member and they're doing this play in front of you and you can follow them through all of their 3 hours or you can follow a different scene. There's maybe like 20 or 25 scenes happening all at once. So everything's different every time.
Does the person who, and maybe you don't know this because of the way you interact with it, mm-hmm. but is it that, are there 25 different narrative threads that go for 3 hours? Or is it like 25 different scenes that get played repetitiously? I don't know if that's the right word. Yeah. Repetitively? Over and over.
There are different threads that kind of go into one main narrative at the end, like a climax at the end. So all of those different scenes are unique to... it's one show, but if you follow one character, you're missing another thread or different scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Does that answer your question?
Sort of.
Okay.
So the person... So if you're an actor in this show, you start the show and you don't have the same conversation over and over. You have one conversation in your story thread that lasts until you get to the final, everyone's all together in one place?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. So you could spend 3 hours with one thread.
Yes.
And then, but you can also leave your thread and go to the middle of another one.
Totally. Yeah.
Interesting.
And as audience member, it feels very personal and it feels very immersive. Like, it took me like 20 minutes to get into it, but I was like, oh, I can do whatever I want. I can go explore. I can find these codes and these hints and these clues and Easter eggs. And that feeling that I got from Sleep No More and Meow Wolf are, like, some of the best, like, feelings I've ever felt in this art performances because it felt personal and interactive. And so maybe going back to what we were talking about with Fuck This Week, it feels cathartic because it's like... we're experiencing life and it often feels isolating and alone and we need to feel like connected to something or someone else that's either bigger than ourselves or whatever it is. I'm sorry, I'm getting really deep, but this
no,
is
no, I'm super into it.
But those experiences made me like super, super immersed in those things. And I don't know, it just like gave me such creative energy and creative spark.
Yeah. Where did you see Meow Wolf? I saw it online and it advertised it as an event in another state.
Yeah,
it's are they here Santa for Fe. South by?
Yeah, they're here for South by.
Oh. I thought that maybe that's why it made it on my feed. I was like, oh, it's probably just something South by advertising to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I did click on it because it is a fascinating name, Meow Wolf. I was like, well, great. I need to know what that is.
Yeah.
I was like, I thought maybe it was going to be like a DJ with a cat DJ head Meow or something.
Yeah. That would make sense.
And I was like, all right, cool.
Just howls the whole time and maybe meows.
I imagined more like just Rat-a-Tat, but like it's just a guy with a half wolf, half cat head.
Rat-a-Tat. I love me some Rat-a-Tat.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Though I feel like I would never, I see people go to concerts and I was like, what's happening? He's pressing a laptop. How's that going? Is that super awesome?
Yeah.
There better be a fucking light show and a puppet show or something. but it's like, it's fine. I've got the music. I can just hit play myself. That's so interesting, though, the immersive stuff. I have such a weird, and anyone who regularly listens to this podcast knows I have a very tough relationship with the audience. As a leader of a sketch show, a person who has to buoy the, like, vibe of everybody, I a lot of times have to go, don't worry that they didn't laugh. They don't get it. We get it. Or like, hey, we've got to be proud of our work, not worried about whether or not it you know, got them, they got it or not. Because, you know, you do so many shows, sometimes it's a raucous fun time and everyone has a good, and everyone's laughing and they leave, oh, it's so great. But sometimes you do a show and you're like, we're amazing! And they're like, you're like, oh, I don't know why we didn't connect. So I have a tough time. Like, I'm always like, they're dumb, they don't get it. But I really need to connect with an audience in a better way. I'm fascinated by the immersive stuff. Feels like a lot of work. I mean, a lot of work I want to do.
Yeah.
But
shit ton of work.
But it's like, how do they... Tell me, so you went to the South by installation, or you went to Santa Fe and you went to the place?
I've been to Santa Fe. I went to Meow Wolf in Santa Fe, dragged some friends. I convinced some friends to go with me. And they all loved it. Two of my friends. And... Yeah, it was great. And did I answer your question? I'm sorry, I just like get nerd out about Meow Wolf.
No, did you also go to the South by exhibit, or is it here and you haven't seen it yet?
They're doing a few different things. So they have like a VR thing. But right now, what I'm taking part of, they have this kind of an ARG, this live role playing game, and you listen to this online radio station, and this online radio station leads you to clues, and these clues lead you to get stamps from these Meow Wolf employees or volunteers. And I'm trying to fill up this passport with all of these stamps by all these threads that I'm trying to find throughout Austin.
Ooh.
And it feels like I'm talking with friends about, I'm texting my buddy Lee, and we're like, what do you think this means? Or there's like might be a phone number that's on a... There's a phone number that was on this PDF. And this, when you call that number, it tells you to go to the soup peddler at lunchtime on a day. But you only found that out if you open up the PDF and to call the number.
Yeah.
And it feels like this immersive experience where you're taking part of this play. And that feels like so unique. And I think all the storytelling improv shows that they do is like just like hitting that, just the tip of that iceberg where it feels like you're part of the show.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to do that through improv, and I've been trying to like think about that a lot of how can we bring in the audience or make it personal or make it unique for each person.
Well, I mean, it sounds like from that, though, that there's a lot of little details that like would have to be created. I mean, if you were to put it with improv, then it would seem that you would need to make that other stuff in the promo.
Yeah.
Like it would have to be, you know, months ahead before you did some particular show and had people figuring stuff out. But I wonder, the fascinating thing to me is that people do it. Because the biggest thing, like I mentioned earlier, that the people who I love the most, the people who I think are the real performers, the real artists, are the ones who are out there doing it, accomplishing it, going through the yucky motions, mm-hmm. making spreadsheets, making phone calls, all like doing stuff. All the boring stuff. Yeah. Because there's so many people that I know who are like, I just don't want to do the boring stuff. And I was like, well, then you don't want to do it.
Yeah.
Like you can't have your cake and eat it too. And I feel like that's a thing. Sometimes I try to, I don't know how old you are, so I'm sorry if I deeply offend you.
34.
Great. Okay. I feel better. I was going to say, I feel like when you're in your 20s, you don't have the, like, bandwidth for that. Like, you don't have the bandwidth for accomplishing two tasks at once. Mm-hmm. One being having a great time doing this art, and the other being super organized and keeping everything in check. And yeah. I get it. It's wild to be in your 20s. It's a very difficult, I'm figuring out who I am time. But sometimes when I get involved with somebody and they just don't want to do half of the work, I'm like, I'm not interested in working with you.
Yeah. And they might not tell you that they don't want to do it.
Oh, no one will.
Yeah,
no,
it's just like ghost.
Yeah, no, like, you oh, have to. On, well, you have me. To context clues from a thousand things.
Yeah, I know.
You watch their when people show up to rehearsal.
Yes.
How ready are they to start? Do they bring the things that they said they were going to, like, in as far as prepare? Because I do sketch, so it's like, are you writing? If you're writing, you're my favorite. Mm-hmm. If you're not writing, we'll see. Like, we'll see how long you last. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, because it's like, you have to do that. Yeah, writing is the hard part. I give you. I mean, if you go on stage and every time the audience loves everything you do, all right, you cannot write. I accept that. But it's like, you have to be, and I feel like that in with like people that are moving up. Because I feel like that's how you get, in fact, if/when you move to LA, that I think is one of the biggest things. And I've heard this on various other podcasts and other people that I know that do this kind of stuff. But it's like, if you don't put in the effort of like showing up to 1,000 auditions you're not going to get, or talking to a manager, or finding the right thing, or like keeping track of stuff, or like promoting your own self as a brand, or if you're a writer, getting work done, having stuff to hand in to people, having a solid packet. Like, if you're not doing that hard work, you're never going to get the fun stuff and the millions of dollars. Like, it's very rare. And also, some people are like, oh, well, you know, some people are just pretty and they get in there. Yeah, you think they then don't do work? No, they're...
They have to.
Someone's, you know, whoever it is that's pretty and in a movie, yeah, they also, like, have probably eat with a nutritionist workout every day. Mm-hmm. Someone's telling them they don't look good because they need to, like, be this perfect specimen of a human. Like, you think when the hottest people you've ever seen on TV that they're not putting effort into that? Get out of here. There were 7 people that made the hair and the makeup and the outfit and the told her how to stand. Like, nobody. Are you kidding me? No. Like, oh, I wish I was Beyonce. No, you fucking don't. She really wakes up at like 4 in the morning to jog 16 miles and then they give her like a berry and go, there you go. There's your food for the day. Like, get out of here with that. Like, no. I don't know. It's a very interesting thing.
And also only one person can be Beyonce. That's Beyonce.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, her mother knew what she was doing when she named her. Yeah. But isn't that funny that people don't name their kids Beyonce? That's like, no one names their kids. It's not a thing.
Oh, yeah.
It's so fascinating. Because I'm sure they... I thought about when like Game of Thrones came out, all those names. I was like, oh, yeah, people are going to be naming their kids, like, you know.
White Walker.
Yeah, exactly. Jon Snow.
Jon Snow, yeah.
Yeah, that's their names.
Breaker of Chains.
Yeah, that's there's like 6 kids in this one preschool class just named Breaker of Chains. One poor kid, his name's Hodor. It's very difficult.
Yeah. He's good at one thing.
He's great. They use him a lot. Now, as far as the like immersive stuff goes, I feel like, I don't know, it might have to be a scripted thing or maybe like half and half. You know what I mean? Like, part of it is, you know, maybe the paths are almost like sketch prov, where it's like, okay, you have to get from A to B, but how you get there is your own deal. Punching the mic. But like, whatever way that you do it, I feel like, in fact, speaking of, we were talking about Aaron Walther earlier, I think he and Justin Strachney made an immersive show at TNM a few years ago, and it was I don't remember exactly how it was, but people really loved it. They like covered the lobby with stuff, and they had characters like as soon as you walked in the door to like interact with, and then the whole space was like a part of it. So the show started like pretty much as soon as you were in the space. which makes it fascinating. But I don't know. I like that idea a lot. I like the idea of building something. How does, I mean, well, the thing that I think most fascinates me is that people actually do it, that Meow Wolf and Sleep No More have people that go to them.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure it's a great experience once you go, but, like, so is an improv class, and I'm still always going, like, come on, take a class.
Yeah.
Like, people don't know what's good for them, and people also don't usually do what's good for them, so it seems surprising that these would go well.
Yeah, and trying to pitch these ideas and convincing my friends to go visit Meow Wolf with me trying to explain it, like, it's so hard to explain because they're, like, personal experiences. And, like, someone trying to tell me to do Sleep No More, they were like, yeah, it's a interactive Macbeth. I was like, But then I went. It blew my fucking mind.
I bet you that one totally started with someone trying to defy the theater gods by saying totally. Macbeth in a theater.
Yeah.
Like, they're all like, you know what? I hate that rule. You know what we're going to do? We're going to screw that rule. And then they're like, cool. And then the brainstorm meeting went way down the rabbit hole. And they're like, this is a good idea. I wonder if it's easier to use a... I'd be fascinated to talk to the people who created Sleep No More and the people who created Meow Wolf to see what inspired them. Was it like role-playing games, like you're saying, or is it like, is it video games, you know, like the kind of video games where you go on an adventure, or even, I wonder, because there's like Sims, you like build a world. I wonder if you do that in real life. Maybe. I guess not. Maybe. I don't know. It'd be interesting to like try to create a world where people can live a life they haven't lived. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm very inspired by this idea, and I read about it, so I'm glad that you're telling me about it, because I thought that's what it was, but, you know, like you said, in words, it can be difficult to explain. So hard to explain.
Yeah, maybe that's a good idea, is you have people create these Sims, and they're, like, building these characters, and they build them for 2 months, and it all, like, coalesces to, like, a show that happens at the end of the month.
Yeah.
Where they're, like, finding these clues or having these, reading these poems that give the characters experience, and then the audience brings those characters to the show, and those personalized characters get to interact with the cast, so to speak.
Yeah, maybe. That would involve the audience wanting to be performers as well, though.
Yeah.
And that's a difficult thing, is like a lot of people just want to witness it.
Just want to like show up and just like entertain me.
I think about that though with reference to like the internet and the way that we have sort of 24/7 access to anything that we want to watch or be part of. Like you can watch the news all day long if you want, or you can watch you know, cartoons. It doesn't matter. You have it available to you. And I wonder if that sort of, the fact that our art consumption is like that, like, makes this style exactly what makes sense to our brains. Like, we're so used to the cacophony that it's almost harder for us to deal with the silence than it is if there's 47 things happening all around us, or there's like 67 clues we have to get through just to get a ticket.
Yeah.
Like, huh. So interesting.
But then maybe that hard work pays off for that person. And the people who are immersed are the people who want to be there. And so you're kind of removing any of the chaff of the audience who don't want to take part. But you have to convince people to play or to go.
Yeah. Man, it would be fascinating to find out, like, how long it took before people, like, really started going to these two things. Like, it was like, was it a year? 6 years? Was it 6 months? Was it 1 month? And then it just spread like wildfire.
I got to take part and listen to the Meow Wolf panel because they have a movie about their origin story, and they said they didn't.
Oh, that's the documentary that's happening at South by Southwest
Film.
That's right.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm going to write that down. Not that I'm going to see it, but I'm sure it'll become available after.
It's all good. But to your question, how long it took, I know that they did not make any money for 78 years.
I'm sorry, what?
They did not make any money for 7 to 8 years.
7 to 8. Seven, okay, great.
Not 78.
I was like, this has been a 78-year project? Yeah. I was like, imagine your grandfather's like, so, Matthew, this is what you're going to do now because it's the family project.
Fuck you. I want to smoke cigarettes and drive the Malibu.
You can, but you need to do it within this theater space.
Okay.
Man, 7 or 8 years before they made any money. I mean, I guess it's not like any of us are making any money.
Yeah.
So, valid. But, whoa. Yeah, because I bet you there's a lot of money that goes into... Well, no, I mean, if it's a PDF online and a phone number, that's easy enough to accomplish.
Yeah, but then you have to create the PDF, create the phone number,
sure,
that the bot that responds to that phone number,
mm-hmm,
and you have to say, if that's a clue, you have to think about all those clues.
You have to tell Soup Peddler people are going to be there on this day,
and then someone has to be at the Soup Peddler,
yeah, to receive those people, mm-hmm, and say, don't forget to buy a juice before you leave. They get, yes, mad when we hang out in their parking lot,
right? Right.
You're like, hey, you can only speak to me if you have a juice in your hand.
Okay, I'll go buy a juice.
That'd be a hell of a sponsorship. You just, like, create a path around town, but you get sponsorships with local companies. You, like, make them go get a taco at Torchy's, and then they meet you at Juice Land and get a juice. And then they're like, you know, you have to walk 2 miles to the middle of the, you know, this pathway, and I'll be waiting there. So it's like, you've made them do exercise and have a nourishing meal and support local business. This is great.
Yeah, it's everyone benefits from that.
Yeah, right?
Except for maybe you. You're spending money. But it's going to local businesses, so it's...
Maybe. I mean, yeah, you can figure out... it's the way we spend money when we do... Like, taking classes, we spend money. Going places takes money. In my case with Sketch, buying props takes money.
Yeah.
But if you're just creating this thing, like, it doesn't cost me any money to make a PDF. It doesn't cost me any money to make a website. Well, mm-hmm, I guess it does. But I mean, like, put content up. Thankfully, you don't get charged per post.
Yeah.
So, like, you could easily do that kind of thing. I don't know. It's just so fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
It brings me back to, like, the hard work that, like, is totally required to do this kind of stuff. Like, it's all... I appreciate the people who want to have fun and do the fun, but I really feel like, you know, if you want to do something, you have to put in a lot of effort. You have to really make it good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I appreciate having this conversation with you. I was having a personal bit of a lull myself, and I'm feeling renewed. So yeah, I appreciate that.
Yeah, I'm feeling renewed by sitting in with that Meow Wolf panel, because they talked about, like, suffering for 7 or 8 years and being starving artists and switching from, like, romanticizing starving artists suffering to now they're doing, like, really well and they're processing, like, 500,000 people through their art installation every year.
Whoa.
And they have, like, 200 employees.
Wow.
In that balance of doing art and making money.
It's the one reason why I would go to Santa Fe.
You should go. Santa Fe is beautiful.
I've never been... I've gone to California, mm-hmm, but I've never been in any of the states between Texas and California. So I've never been in that area of the country. I'm fascinated with the Arizona-New Mexico area.
Yeah. Santa Fe is worth it. I'm going in a couple weeks. My girlfriend and I are celebrating our 1 year anniversary.
Ooh, congrats.
In Santa Fe. Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Are you gonna drag her to Meow Wolf?
I am. Yes.
Does she know? Is it secret? Should we cut that out?
She knows. Yeah, it's not a secret.
Oh, let's be honest. Girlfriends and my husband for sure never make it this far into the park.
Yeah. Agreed. But I'm excited for her to share that, something that feels like really special to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's fascinating.
I just can't tell you, like, how special, like, these interactive things are. I don't know, it taps into something, like, very childlike or very personal. It all feels really good.
Interesting. I would be super... I'm gonna see if I can't look up, like, the psychology of it, because I'm really fascinated with that kind of stuff. I need to get into... studying more about audience and the way people react to stuff, because I find that what you're saying the audience for this kind of thing wants seems to not be what I'm seeing in my audiences. Yeah. So I'm like, how do I both find these audiences and also what do I need to give them to keep them around?
Yes.
You know, so I wonder how to do that kind of thing. It's fascinating. 7 or 8 years makes me feel better.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, I've been doing the neighborhood for almost 8 years now, so maybe I'll crest over it when I hit the, I'll hit our 10-year anniversary and finally I'll figure out how to make money from it.
Yeah, I know that struggle all too well.
Yeah, I mean, but I don't know. I'm of a mind, especially in the interest of being, like, I turned 40 this year, and so I'm still doing this, and at this point, I refuse to do other things. Like, don't get me wrong, I'm always, like, seeing little jobs that are happening in the world and find them fascinating and want to do them. Like, I told my husband the other day I wanted to bake bread in a bakery. He was like, what? Why? You don't need to bake bread in a bakery. And I was like, but wouldn't it be fun? Wouldn't that be a cool job? Like, what? You just, like, punch in dough, and you're like, and bread smells. It's so cool. Like, that could be great.
Do you know Doug Eaton Landis? I'm going to name drop him because he's great.
No, I don't know who Doug Eaton Landis is.
Doug Landis is a baker, and he loves talking bread. He will talk about bread for hours.
Oh.
It's the most fascinating thing. So if you're very interested in...
Yeah. Well, I've done sort of odd jobs since I graduated from college, which clearly is many years ago. But my primary effort of everything has been theater. Mm. Like, I've only been doing improv for about 9 or 10 years. But previous to that, I did, like, straight plays, musicals, and I worked backstage. I was a stage manager for many years. And it's like, so that's how I made money. Straight out of college, I got a job as a stage manager, and I lived for 2 years in New York City just stage managing.
Wow.
And cool. I was like living the dream, like I full-time theater work and paying the bills with it. And I was like, this is fucking great. And so I've tried to maintain that. So because that's such a part of my life, and my husband knows that, when he met me, he knew it was part of my life. Now I'm like a little bit older, and also I have the baby, so I have a lot of, like, you know, I'll be like, let's get out of the house, let's go to some random place, and I'll wheel you around and we'll look at stuff. And sometimes I see someone who's having a good time at their job, and I'm like, wouldn't it be neat to work here? And he's like, theater's what you do.
Yeah.
Stay focused. And I'm like, but a baker might be fun. And he's like, no. You've got to stay focused on the theater thing. Don't get distracted.
I feel that same way. There's so many things that I want to do. And so many things, yeah. Yeah.
Plus, if you try to have a good time in a day job, like, it can make all the difference.
Mm-hmm.
Like, day jobs can be horrible and dumb, and you can hate your life. But I feel like most of the people who are, you know, posting on Facebook every Monday, oh, I can't believe Mondays, and, like, that they're just not... Either they need to switch the industry that they're working in and potentially a pay cut for joy, or they need to just find what's fun in the bullshit that they do.
Yes.
Like, it's like, totally okay, agree. Sure. You sit in, like, the job that I had, you sit in a room by yourself and enter data, but they need that, man. Mm-hmm. Somebody, the person who wrote this form is relying on you, man, to get that in the computer so that next time this guy comes in, mm-hmm. this information is available for them on their little iPad. Like, oh, you're right. This is important work, right? Like, find what's important in your job, or, like, find something that's cool that you want to do. Some things that I really, especially because I've been sort of a poor artist for my whole life. What's your day job?
I work as a writer.
Okay,
so... I work as a writer, which is fancy talk. I do instructional design at a company that...
Fancy talk.
That's fancy talk. For a company that makes phones and tablets.
Oh, so you write the book that explains to me how to use that?
That explains the employees that might explain it, how for you to use it.
Oh.
So, like, internal training stuff.
That's rough.
Yeah.
That's rough. Because you really rely on the people to read what you said and actually be able to communicate it to people.
Yes.
Because that's the difficult part. I thought it was like, oh, wow, you write the book that you know only grandmothers read. That's so interesting, where they're like, well, I just got this iPhone, and I'm reading this 87-page manual to figure out how it works. I was going to be like, all grandmothers appreciate you.
Yeah.
But no, it's the employees. That's really fascinating.
That who may talk to that grandmother who wants to know how to reset their smartphone.
Interesting. Yeah, I suppose it's better than a book is to have a person.
Yeah.
I like that you say you're a writer, but it sounds like you're a writer who makes money as opposed to me, who's a writer who just writes screenplays and puts them in a folder that says, hey, screenplays Amy wrote, and no one reads them ever. Mm-hmm. Even in that, you know, to find the, like, reason why it's important. Like, yeah, of course it's important. It needs to happen. Phones are, like, our life now. Like, people need to know how to do this, especially stupid customer service people who never get paid well and probably aren't of a high enough education sometimes to, like, understand half the stuff, and yet they're the ones who have to communicate it. Oh, that is really important. I don't know. I think it's important too. I'm thinking about raising my child and the idea of that. I've had a lot of jobs that were like rando. Like, you know, I worked at a, when I first moved to town, I worked in a cafe that no one went to. We had maybe 4 people that came in each day that I worked there. I worked there for 3 months. And it was myself at the register and a Mexican woman who only spoke Spanish in the kitchen. And we were alone in this, like, house that was turned into a cafe for all day long. And she didn't speak English, and I spoke Spanish that I learned in high school. Mm-hmm. So I winged it, and we talked in broken Spanish 8 hours a day for 3 months, and no one came in. And yeah, sure, I could have hated that. I could have been like, this is the worst. Why do I have this job? It doesn't pay enough. No one's coming in. But it was like, you know what's cool? Talking to Lourdes for 9 hours a day, practicing my Spanish, and then getting paid for it. Like, she doesn't have to cook anything if nobody asks. So we just sit there and just be like, I wonder if anyone will come in. Who knows? And then we just go on some tangent like this.
That's
where
awesome.
It's like,
yeah,
talking about life. And figuring that out. But, you know, you got to find your joy in each one. That's why I'm like, ooh, bakers. That bitch is like 3 or 4 people in the back room, and they're all just chatting about life and hitting dough. And I don't know. That's just little things. I'm going to call this Doug E. Landis guy.
You should call it Doug Eaton Landis.
Eaton Landis,
Eaton,
sorry.
Landis. I was talking to him the other day, and
he's an improviser?
He is an improviser. Yeah. And he was like, I was like, hey, how's the bread thing going? He's like, you know, I love it. He's like, I won't bore you with me talking about bread. I was like, no, tell me about bread. I know nothing about baking. We didn't have enough time to talk, but I just enjoyed his energy towards his job and what he likes, and, like, unapologetically, like, loved it.
Yeah.
And it was great.
I think there's something nice about people who have excitement. I think that's probably, too, why I was drawn to the improv world and why I stay there, is that, like, the people who will accept, you know, yeah, let's try this weird thing, or, like, let's make believe even though we're in our 30s. Like, yeah, this is great. You know, it's like people that want to find joy in the world. There's so many people around that are just negative and want to say bad things. I mean, social media is chock full of it.
Yes.
If you have hatred in your heart, join Facebook, because it's where you'll find the other people who want to bitch about the world. But it's like, okay, but instead, how about you have a nice day? Like,
yeah,
try your best. Or find joy in something. I worry that it's an innate thing. Like, I always try to convince people that they can turn it around. But I've had students and I've had friends who, I, much as I try to help them see the brighter side, they just don't. I don't know. I don't know if it's innate or learned or
That's a good question. Yeah, something that you either maybe learned or picked up from your parents or saw them make one decision one time and it allows you to now see the positive spin on things. Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if it's the parent thing. Like, you see the way your parents react to stuff, and if they're just, like, never seeing the, you know, silver lining, you're never going to see it.
Yeah, and everything in moderation. Some things you can't find joy in. Some things you just, like, have to be like, okay, this is shitty. Like, it's okay for me to be sad, or it's okay for me to be angry. But it's also okay for me to be joyful about these things that are making me happy.
Yeah. Yeah, there are a lot of things that, you know, rightfully are shitty. but yeah, just to wallow in that. Interesting. Yeah, my mind is going 1,000. Like, I was like, I want to talk about all this immersive stuff, but we have spent a sweet hour and a half chatting, and I feel like, we had a great time. I had a great time talking to you.
Thank you for
sharing a bit of your life story. I didn't get too much into, you know, too many of the specifics, but I feel like the conversation we've had about the audience and stuff is really opening my mind to something, to lesson I needed to learn. Audience, you know what I'm talking about. Well, we have a tough time.
I would talk about immersion stuff or audience things or storytelling all day long. I love.
Super cool. Well, thank you, Matthew Stoner, for chatting with us, and thank you for being on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
And enjoy the rest of your day.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast.